Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
We can learn to ignore the bullshit in the Bible about gay people the same way we have learned to ignore the bullshit in the Bible about shellfish, about slavery, about dinner, about farming, about menstruation, about virginity, about masturbation. We ignore bullshit in the Bible about all sorts of things.
That's Dan Savage speaking at a high school journalism convention. A group of kids there, all high school aged. He's also founder of the It Gets Better Project. And he had a lot of things to say in addition to that very colorful play on words. He says that we should ignore what the Bible says about human sexuality and homosexuality in particular, because we've learned to ignore lots of other things that the Bible was wrong on, slavery, and he has a long list of other things. Joining us to respond to some of the arguments made there and to take them apart if we can, James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries based in Phoenix. He's author of several books, including The Same-Sex Controversy, Defending and Clarifying the Bible's Message About Homosexuality. James, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be with you.
Dan Savage assumes, and he allows the assumption and the impression to stand throughout his speech there, that gay bullying, and there have been some cases of this, and even to the point of some kids being killed, that it's always being perpetrated by Christians using the Bible as justification. Is that true?
That's not even close to true. And in fact, I would like to start off by pointing out that Dan Savage's entire apologetic approach is dependent upon his audience not having an opportunity to cross-examine him or to actually challenge the presuppositions and worldview that he brings to it. And that certainly is the case in what these poor young students were subjected to in this journalism conference. I'm not exactly sure what the relationship of journalism and this was, but I never figured that part out. But the idea that the fundamental assertion is being made here is if the Bible identifies something as being fundamentally contrary to the Creator's desires for his own creation, that means that human beings, when they see that, will automatically want to bully somebody who's doing that evil. And he does not even show the young people enough respect to connect the dots as to why they should actually believe that. Why they should, I mean, does it not follow of absolute necessity that what Dan Savage did there means that he is encouraging bullying against Christians? I mean, it would follow of necessity if he's identifying our viewpoints as incorrect, and human beings will just automatically beat up anybody or bully anybody who has a different viewpoint than them, then that would mean he is causing hatred and bullying towards Christians, which, of course, you would say is absurd, but that's the absurdity of this entire kind of argumentation where you don't state the fundamental presuppositions you're operating on, because if you did, everyone would laugh at you. And that's, unfortunately, what's going on in so much of the conversation that takes place in our culture today, is these unstated assumptions can never survive examination under the light of day. But unfortunately, in most of the venues in which he speaks, he's never going to be subjected to any meaningful cross-examination anyway.
Okay, so as a matter of fact, there is no necessary connection between Christianity or the Bible more generally and gay bullying.
Well, remember, what he says later on in his talk is that slave owners, they held the Bible above their heads. What kind of argumentation is that? Anything. I could take Dan Savage's talks. I could take Dan Savage's writings and wave them over my head while saying anything. Is Dan Savage therefore responsible for my use or abuse of what he's saying? I mean, we all recognize, just on any logical level, that if you're going to claim something as a source of authority, that you need to have engaged in some kind of intelligent, meaningful interpretation of what was read. You need to take it in context. That's just natural recognition of how human beings are supposed to behave and how we communicate with one another. But evidently, when it comes to this subject, no. As long as the Bible has been abused, as long as the Bible has been used to do something you don't like, then that's a problem with the Bible, and that means that the Bible is evil and the Bible is filled with the things that we had to bleep out in our audio versions of this particular discussion.
Here's another part of what Dan Savage had to say speaking to these high school students, and I'd like your response.
The Bible says that if your daughter's not a virgin on her wedding night, if a woman isn't a virgin on her wedding night, she shall be dragged to her father's doorstep and stoned to death. Calista Gingrich lives. And there is no effort to amend state constitutions to make it legal to stone women to death on their wedding night if they're not virgins, at least not yet. We don't know where the GOP is going these days.
It's a bit of a joke at the expense of the GOP, but laying the politics aside, a very perhaps not so subtle form of demagoguery there, James?
Oh, yeah. just a little bit. I mean, he's on pretty safe ground knowing that the majority of the people to whom he's going to be speaking have probably never read any of the Pentateuch outside of the first few chapters of Genesis and maybe the Exodus story, and hence are going to take anything he says at face value, and the last thing they should do is to take anything he says at face value because his facts are rather foggy. But the only thing that he mentions is a law that specifically related to the issue of virginity in marriage and specifically would have related to deception in the initiation of a marriage in regards to someone who claimed to be a virgin but was not. And nowhere in any of this, whether he's talking about homosexuality, whether he's talking about shellfish, whether he's talking about slavery, does he even begin to give a recognition of the fact that Christians for 2,000 years have had to, at times, struggle with, and we still continue to struggle with, the recognition of how we look at the Old Testament text in light of the New Testament revelation and how we make the distinction between that which is ceremonial, that which was specifically in regards to national Israel, and that which is a moral law. Now, there have been tremendous books written, tremendous amount of thought invested in listening to the entire message of the Bible at this point and allowing Jesus' message to come in. And, hey, he can't argue that we can't do that because he jumped all the way to Philemon to make his argument. So if he's willing to grab from here, there, and everywhere, then he cannot hardly argue that we cannot allow the Bible to speak as a whole. He speaks of the Bible as a whole here, so we're being completely fair there. But the reality is there's a tremendous amount of thought that has gone into a recognition of what is a creation ordinance, what is something that represents God's will for his creatures that transcends all religious or cultural or temporal boundaries, and that which was specifically meant to distinguish the people of Israel from those around them in religious worship, in national identity, et cetera, et cetera. Now, he can very easily say, well, you folks haven't come to an absolute consensus on that. Well, he's right. We do have some differences of opinion between different groups. In fact, we'll go beyond that, and we'll admit that the vast majority of Christians have never given it a thought. And, in fact, I would be frightened, I imagine you would be too, to ask most of our parishioners almost any questions about the content of the book of Leviticus after a Sunday morning sermon, because it's just probably not one of the main texts that are being read regularly, even though Jesus quoted from it almost more often than any other book of the Old Testament. And so he doesn't let his audience know, and in fact ignores the reality of the fact that there are distinctions that must of necessity be made if you're going to look at the Bible as a whole. He wants to look at the Bible whole. He wants to be able to grab stuff from anywhere. Then he cannot argue that we cannot do the exact same thing. And we, of course, want to do so in a harmonious way and to see how all the parts of the Bible fit together.
Now, he offers there the strong implication. I don't think it's just my impression or inference, but the implication that if Christians had their way, somewhere on their list, is a constitutional amendment requiring the stoning of non-virgins on their wedding night. They just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, I didn't you get your email about that?
I must have missed the meeting.
I missed the meeting too. I know that there is as you say, there's pure demagoguery, there's fear mongering there. That, you know, it's amazing. The more and more secularism becomes the predominant dogma of our society, the more and more you hear about the rise of the theocracy and all the rest of this kind of stuff that just makes me go, what are you people talking about? I have no earthly idea. I mean, I know there are some folks out there that, you know, their eschatology forces them toward a certain understanding of how the church and state are to relate. But the idea of a full-blown reestablishment of the entirety of the Mosaic Covenant, including all the theocratic laws that specifically identify the people of Israel, I haven't seen too many people that have stopped shaving the corners of their beards, for example, just to begin that movement. It is demagoguery. It is meant to implant in people's minds concepts and ideas that unfortunately take a tremendous amount of education to somehow dislodge them. If they're even willing to listen long enough to give us the chance to do it.
Dr. James White is our guest. When we come back, we'll have 10 more minutes with him on this Tuesday afternoon. It's May the 1st, talking about anti-bullying Christian message that was given, an anti-Christian message that was given by an anti-bullying speaker and responding to it. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or our Twitter address, @issuesetc. I also wonder, we'll get to this on the other side of the break, whether or not there is a bit of debating sleight of hand, not completely laying all your cards on the table, implying that perhaps the violence of stoning in Leviticus is being carried out in this in the bullying of homosexuals, and this is what all Christians want. We'll get to that on the other side of the break.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
They Were Afraid, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
For to proclaim the resurrection of Jesus, an empty tomb, is not good news, not for sinners, apart from his death for sinners.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon and an Ascension sermon for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Is Christianity merely one limited half-true perspective on God? Find out in an article I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled, The Blind Men and the Elephant, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Christian Teve's journey from the agnosticism of a committed Darwinist to faith in Jesus Christ. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
We ignore what the Bible says about slavery because the Bible got slavery wrong. Sam Harris, in Letter to a Christian Nation, points out that the Bible got the easiest moral question that humanity has ever faced wrong. Slavery. What are the odds that the Bible got something as complicated as human sexuality wrong? 100%.
It's Dan Savage of the It Gets Better Project speaking to a group of high school kids who are responding to some of the arguments that he made there with James White. James, I was thinking about this during the break, whether or not what Savage does, back to the issue of stoning of non-virgins, what he does, maybe he stumbles upon it, I don't know if he's that clever, without any argument necessary whatsoever, he connects one violent image from the Old Testament with the violent image of bullying today. And again, without any arguments put forth, simply says, there you go, that's what the Bible encourages.
Exactly. He doesn't have to worry about his audience knowing enough about the context to be able to say, well, wait a minute, there is a context to that. There is something very important about the nation and the purity of the nation and the covenant of marriage and all the things related to that that was connected to that particular law amongst the people of Israel, their holiness, et cetera, et cetera. So he doesn't have to worry about all that. He just knows that he has an audience where as long as he can bring up images of violence, that you're going to look, this is what we face today. This is what we face in the modern generation. This is why you see the massive shift in that generation toward acceptance of homosexual marriage and things like that, because we don't have any longer there a foundation of recognizing that marriage is an institution provided by God, that it is for our good, that we have a creator that can define these things. All of that stuff just simply isn't there. And the same way, the clip you just played in coming back in, when he's talking about slavery, the Bible did not get it wrong. Most people have no idea what the difference was between slavery in the Hebrew system, slavery in the Roman system, and slavery in the American South. They have no earthly idea what the differences were in those situations. They have no earthly idea that slavery in the biblical context was sometimes the absolute only way to save and maintain life. They've had McDonald's and Burger King their entire life. They've never known what it is to be hungry. And so the idea that for, well, large portion of human history, there have been always people living right on the edge, barely on subsistence, and that they needed a way to be able to find, you know, if everything went wrong, the crops failed, your business failed, something happened to where everything you own is gone, they needed a way to be able to live. They didn't have Social Security. They didn't have the abundance of food that we have in our society today. And so the idea that the Bible got that wrong is just absurd. To go to Philemon and say, well, Paul didn't say free your Christian slaves. So what's he actually saying? He's saying, okay, what Paul should have done is started a political revolution and overthrown the economic system of the Roman Empire. In other words, the Bible needs to impose Western-style democracy or it's somehow evil. Has no concept of the idea. And maybe this is something he doesn't have a concept of, though I think he has a concept of a lot of the rest of it. He's obviously an intelligent man. But he has no concept of the idea that the gospel must be able to transcend all political and cultural boundaries. That's what it's all about. That's what Acts 15 was all about. And to demand that Paul would have to do that for him to be a good guy is to anachronistically ignore the fact that this gospel has to be just as relevant in modern-day North Korea as it was in Rome or in 10th century North Africa or whatever else it might be. He gets away with it because I really doubt he's ever called on the carpet and put in a position where he actually has to answer. And I know that because I've debated some of these guys. I've debated Barry Lynn and Bishop Spong on these subjects. And you get them into an actual debate on these things where it's even amount of time and you can actually ask real questions, they fall apart.
Okay, so with that said, what do you make of the argument? And it's you know, it works on high schoolers. but what do you make of his argument is that, and he borrows it from Sam Harris, a famous new atheist, that if the Bible got slavery wrong, you've already said it didn't, but if it did, let's just concede for the sake of argument that it did get slavery wrong, the biggest moral question ever to face the human race, then what are the chances of it getting something as complicated as human sexuality wrong? He says 100%. I've heard this argument many times. If the Bible's wrong on one thing, it's got to be wrong on, well, anything you want it to be wrong on.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is it's twofold. A, I can't grant that because that's granting something that isn't true. And secondly, the idea that he's presenting there in regards to This is more complicated. He's demonstrated he doesn't even know the complexity of the economic system that gave rise to what the Bible said about slavery in the first place. So he's introduced one is a simple question. Well, it wasn't a simple question. It's not a simple question. That's just ignorance. And the other is a more complicated question. And really what I think underlies this more is the idea that, well, you know, we know so much more about homosexuality today than anybody did back then. When I was doing my research for the same-sex controversy that I co-authored with Jeff Neal, that was just a constant theme of the pro-homosexual authors, whether religious or non-religious, was that, look, nobody back then could say anything meaningful to the subject of homosexuality because they were just not as smart as we are today. And there is a humongous amount of modernistic hubris that exists amongst so many people today, though, because they didn't have iPads and iPhones. They didn't have modern psychiatry. They can't really say anything meaningful here. And that's just absolutely absurd. I think in many ways, ancient men, because they were not distracted, because they had to think more, they actually had to, you know, work math problems without using a computer, they weren't distracted with all the things around them, seemed to think much more deeply than most people do today. Evidence of this, go back 200 years in our own country to the textbooks that used to be used for kids, and you'll find our high schoolers really struggling to even begin to understand that kind of stuff today. So there's a modernistic, we are so much smarter, the Bible is so old, it's outdated, nobody back then really understood all these things type of an idea that is being communicated, and it's communicated over and over and over again in many, many different ways. And unfortunately, because the Old Testament primarily is a closed book to most Christians, we don't spend much time in it. You hardly hear any meaningful exegesis as far as teaching and preaching through Old Testament books and discussing the backgrounds and the culture and all that stuff. Because of that, we're normally left going, and we become silenced. And that's exactly what they're looking for, is to silence them.
I'm wondering, I mean, to kind of wrap this up, let's make it clear. The Bible has something meaningful to say about homosexuality. What is it?
It positively presents to us the fact that we have a creator who knows what he's done in the creation of male and female. Jesus in Matthew chapter 19 stated that God, from the beginning, made them male and female. And that means there's a creation purpose in gender and in the roles that God has designed for that that is absolutely connected with our experience of life. And to go against what he has defined there is to go against the very source of life. It is to damage ourselves. And biblically, the kind of love that exists between a husband and wife, that love requires the otherness of the other person. I cannot love, in a biblical sense, a mirror image of myself. I am changed, transformed, and made more like my Creator in the love that I have to show for that one who is different than me, that woman who is my wife. That is the positive message. And unfortunately, all the people like Dan Savage want to emphasize is the negative message they don't want to hear, because it connects directly to the reality of the fact that the average lifespan of the practicing homosexual is significantly shorter than that of the heterosexual. They don't want that connection to be made. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about the positive aspect of Jesus' teachings and the entire Bible's teachings on gender and sexuality and marriage. And so they want to always put it in the negative rather than the positive.
And finally, with only about 30 seconds, does the Bible in any shape, matter, or form encourage bullying of homosexuals, the stoning of homosexuals, you know, because you disagree with them, or any other kind of violence against homosexuals?
The biblical message to any Bible-believing Christian is that we are the chief of sinners. We need to see our own sin, and therefore, as those who've been redeemed from our sin, we stand as those to show light to others and to show grace to others. The idea that that would cause you to bully someone or to beat someone is just as far removed from the biblical message as possible.
Folks, you'll find a link to Alpha and Omega Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. James White is director of Alpha and Omega Ministry, based in Phoenix. He's author of several books, including The Same-Sex Controversy, Defending and Clarifying the Bible's Message About Homosexuality. James, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Folks, if you appreciate responses to Christian critics like Dan Savage, please help us equip the priesthood of all believers by making a tax-deductible gift during the Easter season. Now, for any size of contribution before Pentecost Sunday, that would be May 27th, we'll send you a CD of one of my Easter and Ascension sermons. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Issues, etc. Send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Here's the address again, LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. You can also make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. Now, when you donate, please indicate if you want these sermons on a CD or as an MP3 download. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind during the 50 days of Easter. When we come back, it's Hour 2 of Issues, etc. on this Tuesday afternoon. The church is remembering on this day, May 1st, St. Philip. Which Philip are we talking about? There may be one or maybe two. And St. James. Well, there are a lot of Jameses. So which James will we be talking about on the other side of the break? We'll find out. Dr. Curtis Giese will clear up some of the name confusion of these two significant New Testament figures on the other side of the break. Then we're going to take up the Lord's Prayer and talk about praying the Lord's Prayer, why it is a prayer different from any prayer that you might come up with. It is, after all, the Lord's Prayer, and why praying it is a corrective to a lot of the things that we do wrongfully when we pray. Hour 2 of Issues, etc., right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, etc. Issues, etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
He's the most Lutheran man in the world.
I'm not always in Pensacola, Florida, but when I am, I attend Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Congregation of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida invites you to join us for divine services on Sundays at 8 or 10:30, Sunday school and Bible class at 9:15. Whether you're in Pensacola to enjoy the white sandy beaches of the Emerald Coast or for military training, we invite you to join us. Jesus is here. Word, water, bread and wine for you.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Stay Lutheran, my friends.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.